Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back to the last half hour of today's Issues for today. Hope it's not the last half hour of today's Issues forever. Something I don't know is going to happen out there. But we appreciate you listening to AFR. You want to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net is our email address. You can watch the show live on Facebook or YouTube. Just type in today's issues on the American Family. Just type in today's issues on Facebook or YouTube and watch the show live. And our app is available free to download. Takes you about 60 seconds, and you can listen anywhere in the world to American Family Radio just by downloading our app. Steve Jordahl is with us, joining Ed Vitagliano and Walker Wildman and yours truly. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good afternoon.
A lot of stuff to talk about. Yes, Fred. Fred's back here.
Fred's walked back in.
Yeah, our audience has been tracking the story involving Pastor Andrew Brunson in Turkey. We have just found out that Turkish authorities have agreed to release him from prison to allow him to return to his home in Turkey. All right, he has a next court date. I think it's sometime in the fall. We had that story last week. So he has been released from prison. He's allowed to go home with his wife and kids there in Turkey. They're not releasing him from the country.
Right.
But this is, I believe, as a result of the pressure that has come from the United States government. Among other things, the government has held up the delivery of some new fighter jets to Turkey. The president of the United States, Donald Trump, has called the leader of Turkey about this. There has been incredible pressure from the United States government on this case. Pastor Brunson accused of all kinds of strange things like helping terrorists in Turkey, et cetera, et cetera. It has been a sham case from the beginning, but this is an important development. Prayers have been going up. I know we have folks in our audience.
The president tweeted about this.
Yes.
Yeah. So a bit of good news coming out on Pastor Andrew, as he's known, that he's been released from prison. He's allowed to go home to be with his wife and his kids.
And he's an American?
He is an American from North Carolina, I believe it is.
Okay. So what's he doing over there?
Well, he's been there more than 20 years in Turkey, established a church there. He's a church pastor in Turkey.
Right. Okay.
And
what's he accused of? Oh, you're saying he's accused of aiding and abetting?
Well, it was that the coup was a part of this coup attempt.
Yes.
Supposed coup attempt.
Supposedly, and he was somehow involved with that.
Right. Yeah.
And all of this has been completely denied.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good news.
All right.
Praise the Lord. A lot of people have been praying for him.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Fred.
That is good news.
Absolutely.
A lot of our listeners have been following this, praying for him.
I did see the president, was about a week or 10 days ago, he tweeted about this very thing. So
Turkey has been getting more and more restrictive with regard to this. Used to be a fairly democratic place.
We're selling Turkey
closing down
jet planes.
Well, they're part of NATO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I know, but man, I don't know. I got mixed feelings about selling weaponry to places that could attack Israel easily.
Right.
Mm.
But on the other hand, you want to make friends with as many people as you can over there to keep the peace. So.
And as Ed said, it might be part of a an agreement, a contract through NATO that we have that we supply.
You know, the reason we, and this is me talking as an individual based on what I've read and studied over the years. So what I say, that's all I'm basing my information on. But the reason we have peace between Egypt and Israel, of course, Israel is very strong militarily, and I don't think Egypt wants to get into an argument or a fight with Israel unnecessarily. But also, we buy off Egypt.
Right.
By we, I mean the United States. We give a lot of money to Egypt, especially to their military, to keep the ISIS types, the Al Qaeda types, under wraps.
So Muslim Brotherhood,
Yes, so that the Middle East doesn't blow up.
Right.
So that's just a fact of life. So it may be the same type thing in Turkey. You know, we just give them a lot of money and tell them to keep the peace or don't be attacking Israel. And by the way, Israel shot down a Syrian warplane yesterday. Did you see that?
They did.
So I didn't. Is that a one-day story?
Well, the claim that Syria claimed it was in its own airspace. Israel said no, wandered over into our airspace. And Israel's kind of hair trigger because Syrians have moved troops up, to the border of the Golan Heights. Iran has, I think, troops or advisors in Syria. I mean, it's Israel's very wary about what's going on. So,
for good reason.
Yep.
All right, Steve, take it away.
Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats was giving an address at the Hudson Institute either yesterday or the day before, and he revealed something that I hadn't heard of. You know, we've been talking for months now about Russia perhaps interfering in the U.S. or trying to interfere in the U.S. elections with Facebook ads and this kind of stuff. Well, according to Mr. Coats, America's infrastructure is literally under attack every day by foreign actors. The Department of Homeland Security and the Federal Bureau of Investigation warn that the Russian government is conducting cyber attacks against an array of sectors that include energy, nuclear, water, aviation, critical manufacturing. His quote at the Hudson Institute, Dan's, was, "The warning lights are blinking. Think about New England in January, the grid going down for 3 days. A lot of people are going to suffer and die." This is something we don't talk about a lot, but apparently, according to Coates, it's under attack every day.
Well, my own opinion is if, and maybe we're already doing this, if we're not, and we find out that actors like Russia are conducting cyber attacks or attempting to breach this or that, we ought to pay back. And maybe we do that. I don't know, and we just aren't told. But if we find out, we have to say, listen, we're going to give you a taste of your own medicine, knock it off, or your grid's going down.
There is a bill going through Congress that would authorize just that, even though the president already has the authority to do that. I was reading in the article that this was talking about that they're voting on to give the president the power to take commensurate measures against anybody that messes with the power grid.
Yeah, and I read one of these. This may be the same story about them hacking. You know, they hack a vendor, and then they get through. Anyways, they end up getting to the actual power station, and the Department of Homeland Security can't really say if they directly caused outages or not. But nonetheless, the problem that's been created here is the left and the Democrats have tried to falsely frame Donald Trump for something he didn't do in an effort to bring out his presidency, but it's put him against them, rather him against Russia. So he is hesitant to condemn Russia because he doesn't want to look like, yeah, Russia's the bad actor and I'm a part of Russia. So just like Dinesh D'Souza said last week, so I think, first off, much of this happened under President Obama. They did nothing about it. Yeah. I think President Trump would do more about it if he wasn't in this whole thing with...
And may I offer an observation about this? I guess I can because I'm co-host of this show. But to answer my own question...
That's only one of the reasons you may.
Yes, that's right.
Duly noted, Steve. I'm self-aware of that. I think this whole thing with Russia and President Trump, and should he be... You know, should he have gotten Vladimir Putin in a headlock...
giving him a noogie.
Quite frankly, I think President Trump. You ever been the parent that comes home from work, and the other parent? This happened to me, by the way. I had a real life experience with this, but it happens from time to time. The other parent is exhausted with something one of their children has done or is doing, and the parent meets you at the door and says, "You need to go deal with your son."
Oh, yeah.
Or your daughter, because they've done fill in the blank, and you need to go deal with it. And so, you know, you set your backpack down or whatever, and you walk upstairs, and you put your keys down, and then you walk into the room, and you try to work yourself up to some kind of a look of anger, indignation. How dare you? Let me tell you something. You do that again, you know, you're going to be whatever.
Yeah,
but it just ain't there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have no emotional, 2 hours of emotional investment into this crisis situation. You just got off from work. All you want to do is you know, maybe eat dinner and watch a little TV, and now you got to go, you know, discipline your kid.
You got to go confront Walker.
Yeah. Wow.
Was he successful, Walker? Did he get the look on his face?
Wow. Allison's looking over my shoulder, seeing if I'm going to be tough enough on. To her credit, she handles all that pretty well by herself. But I'm just giving you the scenario.
Right.
Donald Trump is the parent who got home, and the liberal media and the Democrats and some Republicans are the ones yelling at him, you need to go up there and deal with that.
That's actually a really good metaphor.
When they've been around for decades and they haven't dealt with
it. And they didn't deal with it, but they want him to go up there and deal with it. And he's like going, What?
I just got here.
He hadn't done anything that I know.
That's a really good metaphor for
it. So Donald Trump's supposed to work up some kind of, Donald Trump is president. He's dealing with domestic issues, everything. And somebody's briefing him, hey, the Russians, they interfered with our election. You go out there and you tell him off. He's going how did they interfere exactly? I'm getting this from the left because they're trying to delegitimize my presidency.
Right.
I don't know if I want to sign up for that.
Yeah, they're trying to say the only reason I got elected is because the Russians jumped in.
Right, right. So I just think all this stuff is, it's selective outrage. The Democrats had no problem with Barack Obama dealing with Fidel Castro, straight up.
Right.
And opening up, relations with, normalizing relations with Cuba.
Right.
But, you want stories about persecution.
Right.
You know.
Brutality.
And brutality. They're just as bad in Cuba as they ever have been in Russia. And President Trump's supposed to, but nobody had a problem with President Obama dealing with Fidel Castro. They didn't say, you need to go down there and tell him how it is and tell him, they didn't say that, did they? Do you remember any of that?
Well, Cuban Americans did, but that was about it.
No.
Maybe some conservatives.
All right, Steve, next story.
Just a little warning. This is a little preview of what we might see if we were to ever have a Democrat president. So the election's coming up. Just keep in mind. This Elizabeth Warren was talking with CNBC.
Senator from Massachusetts.
Progressive, some say fake Indian senator from Massachusetts. She's a little bit on the Bernie Sanders socialist side of the aisle with things. So she was,
and is seen as a potential favorite to...
she's on the list of people who could run for 2020.
She could win Who Most Looks Like a Librarian.
Yeah, she could.
Don't you think so, Ed?
Yeah, well, her hair's not
long
enough.
I know I'm stereotyping librarians.
I know. I'm going to have to disagree on this.
Okay.
I don't think her hair's long enough. It needs to be long librarian? Enough to put up in a bun.
Okay.
So librarians, that's just my personal opinion.
I'm just telling you, librarians have changed the last 10 years.
I am not insulting
people. The hairstyles have gotten shorter on most librarians. But I'm telling you.
I'm not trying to insult ladies who may have their hair up in a bun. Okay.
Madam librarian. Okay. But she was talking with CNN's John Harwood, and the tax rate came up, and this is what she had to say.
The values of the Republican Party that passed those tax cuts are to give $1.5 trillion away to the richest Americans and the biggest corporations and let everybody else pick up the crumbs. And I don't think that's the right way to think about it.
What's too high for the top personal rate?
It's not about a number. That's what negotiations are all about. It's
50% obviously too high?
Look, there was a time in a very prosperous America, an America that was growing a middle class, an America in which working families were doing better generation after generation after generation, where the top marginal rate was well above 50%.
It's 90%.
That's exactly right.
There you go. We're not going to rule out 90% tax rates.
That's all about the negotiations once she becomes president.
The art of the deal, so to speak.
You know, what I want to ask, and CNN's not going to be tough on Elizabeth Warren, but what I want a reporter to ask when a Democrat, a leftist says that these tax cuts were to give $1 trillion plus the richest, and the rest of us have crumbs. So you would be okay with a $1 trillion tax cut as long as it all went to the middle class and nothing went, no tax cuts for those who are wealthy?
She'd probably say yes.
You think she would?
I think so. I don't think so.
This is why I disagree.
Are you saying would she say it or would she vote for it?
No, I'm saying if she was asked that, what would she say? Because I think I don't know what she would say. But here's what I think leftists would believe: no, that money's the government's, and we want to spend it on stuff we think we should spend it on.
In reality,
we don't want any tax cuts. But they always frame the tax cuts as going to the wealthiest. The rest of us get crumbs. Okay, so what if the rest of us in the middle class, instead of getting crumbs, got a big fat roast beef sandwich of a tax cut? You'd be okay with that? I don't believe they really would, because they think the money really belongs to the
government. They've never been
for
tax cuts for anybody.
That's right.
At least since Kennedy.
What they are for is redistributing wealth that the government controls so they can attach strings to it and tell people what to do.
Yeah.
But the one thing I said on Sandy's show this morning that I hosted is, number one, the fella asker, the host, says, you know, what rate would you like? And she basically says, well, it's not about the numbers. It is about the numbers. We're talking tax cuts and money. And that shows that the Democrats have no message, they have no party platform, and on taxes, they don't have their own playbook that they say, you know, if we're elected, here's what we'll do. It's all Trump's the devil, and the rich are getting too much money, and I don't want to talk about the numbers.
Oh, and by the way, a lot of the rich that they're talking about are small business owners that would have to pay more taxes. And if you want to talk about fair share, I can't remember what the latest numbers are, but the top 2 or 3% of earners pay 40 or 50% of the taxes.
Right.
You want to make it fair? I think they'd be all in favor of it.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed Walker and Steve Jordahl. Steve, what's next?
You remember during the campaign, every other day we thought that President Trump had said something that was going to derail his campaign and he was going to be gone, but it never seemed to happen. It's still happening. They are coming out with the latest popularity polls for the president, and this is the week after he allegedly misstepped with Putin in Helsinki and had that whole everybody's
traitor
and everything. Well, his approval rating has not dipped a single point. it's on the low side as history.
It's under 50, though.
It's at 45. Democrats kind of are a little bit puzzled as to how in the world to get something on this guy that's going to bring him down.
You know what? I think America, 90% of America, again, I'm just guessing here, is pretty locked in to what they think about what's going on and the direction that the candidates, whoever they may be, want to take the country, especially at a presidential level. So I don't think anything changes their mind. People aren't going to switch from Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump because the Clinton Foundation is pay per play for the State Department, cash for access to Hillary Clinton, or the uranium one thing. You get what I'm saying? People who support Hillary Clinton, they think that Donald Trump is so awful that they would rather support Hillary Clinton. I don't care if she is dishonest.
Right.
Okay? And it's the same way, flip that. Mm-hmm. Most people who support Donald Trump think that Hillary Clinton is devil woman.
Right.
And they're not going to vote for her. And if they can vote for him to stop her, they don't care. They don't care. Well,
it's not a game
for
changer.
For all practical purposes, they don't care whether he had affairs with two women 10, 15 years ago. How does that impact America today moving forward when so much is at risk? So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So a lot of these 24-hour news cable shows dealing with these issues, I saw Reince Priebus last night, the former Republican National Committee leader, and he said he's been in politics a long time, and he's learned most all these stories don't move anybody from one camp to the other. Maybe there are some independents out there that it sways, but for most people, the reason, to your point, Steve, the 45, 47%, I've seen as high as 50, 49 approval rating for President Trump doesn't change is because people believe one way or another, and how President Trump talked about Putin in Helsinki, people are going, I don't give a rip.
Yeah.
I really don't.
He's putting constitutional judges on the court.
Yeah. Now that does matter to his support base, to President Trump's base. He better keep his base on board.
Right.
Yeah.
Or he didn't have a chance. Mm-hmm. He knows that. Go ahead, Steve.
Next story, or you
next
want?
Next story.
Okay.
Steve.
Well, let's do something from the Snowflake file.
Hey, Snowflake.
Seems that, by the way, who in the world is naming minor league baseball teams? I don't know, but there's one called the Montgomery Biscuits. And
you said this in the story meeting, and I thought, man, that's the
name Montgomery of the team. Montgomery, Alabama, I'm assuming.
Yes,
right?
Montgomery, Alabama, and the Biscuits. They are a minor league club, and I don't remember what they're. Oh, they're the Tampa Bay's AA affiliate. They had a minor league teams are known for doing this. They had a promotion night, and they decided they were going to have a millennials night. Well, millennials are a little upset because what they did is they decided to serve avocado burgers, which, you know, the healthy thing. They set up several selfie stations because millennials are known for taking selfies. They put a couple napping stations in because they got to have a safe space, and they gave every millennial that came a participation ribbon.
Now, minor league baseball is all about promotions because you have to get people in the seats, and you want to make it family friendly.
That's
and
right.
It's cheap because you're not going to get major league quality baseball. So there better be some other reasons. So the millennial that's pretty funny.
Yeah,
but I got to say, even though I give our millennials here no quarter and just continually, tease them,
Badger.
I do feel for them because they are so put upon. They're so criticized, all that kind of stuff. How are they ever going to escape the snowflake
stereotype?
They might not, but
Fast Walker, he's one of them.
Well, sounds like we need a new generation to start over fresh.
The Biscuits, the Montgomery
the
Biscuits.
The Montgomery Biscuits.
Wow.
Yeah.
What kind of name is
I
that?
I used
for
to
a
live
team?
About 2 miles away from the AAA stadium in Colorado Springs, so the Rockies at first, and then they changed to the Brewers.
The AAA?
AAA.
That's
right. It's good baseball, pretty good baseball, and a lot of fun, a lot of interesting stuff. They had one of those sumo wrestlers, you know, those guys that get in the big sumo suit?
Yeah.
And and he was out there, the mascot was in the sumo suit out there doing something, and he bumps into like a little 10-year-old kid who's out there playing with him. Bumps into him, knocks him over, knocks the kid out cold.
Wow.
I mean, cold.
Was he okay?
Well,
Steve doesn't care.
Nah,
this is just
the kid. They brought him up. I was sitting pretty close to where they attended to him, and they revived him and everything. But you didn't see the mascot.
I've never seen a minor league game, so here's my big concern: are the hot dogs and the nachos cheaper?
Yes.
At a minor league?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
because they're tremendously expensive.
They had a $4 Tuesday game. That if you went to the Sky Sox, $4 to get in, and then $2 hot dogs.
Man, I'd go see the Biscuits.
Yeah,
for $2 hot dogs
and eat a hot dog.
Man,
yeah,
almost worth the price of admission right there.
Thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
All right, Ed, appreciate your contribution,
and I appreciate you appreciating me, Tim.
Walker,
you're welcome.
You.
Nice shirt, by the way, Walker.
Thank you.
Walker has a shirt with
the polo.
Hey, millennials know how to dress.
Some of them.
Thanks to Brent Creeley for running the control boards and producing the show today. We'll see you back here tomorrow, everybody. With keep listening to AFR, by the way.